Okay. Good morning. Today is Thursday, May 26, 2016. It's 9 a.m. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners County Administration Workshop. First up on our agenda, legal counsel. We have two orders, the first being order number 2016-unnumbered as yet, in the matter of regulation of motor vehicle parking on Galise Road. And the other one is 1B, which is a similar, only it is the regulation of motor vehicle parking on Pierce Park Road.
Yes.
Okay.
So same concept for two different parks. This is a very basic order with a twist to it. You have previously posted no parking signs by use of an order, and so that's nothing new. What this is seeking to address is apparently a hazardous situation that has developed around at least two of the parks, and apparently three that I'm waiting on, or I'm talking with Public Works about what to do about the Fish Hatchery Park situation. We're looking at how to exactly define that stretch of road. It is very unusual for counties, as best I can tell, to issue parking tickets. Cities do it all the time, but the counties tend not to get into that, though you do have statutory empowerment to put up no parking signs, establish stretches of road along which the motoring public is not permitted to park, and to empower persons to enforce that. And so what the commissioner here convened a small group, staff, and what the recommendation was to authorize through this order parks personnel to write parking tickets on these stretches of road that are close to the parks.
Mm-hmm.
The revenue would not come to the county. Spoke with Arthur about that, and just like a traffic ticket that the sheriff's office writes, it's none of those as a revenue generator. It's all going to go to the courts, just as it does currently with the park, even if it's in a park.
If there's a violation, yeah, the $252 fee goes
to the court.
Goes to the state.
It does, yeah. So this is not like something you're doing for revenue.
It's a safety element entirely.
Yeah, so.
On Pierce Park, the entrance there, there's been, I've counted at least 20 cars before, parking on either side of a very steep slope, and the curved road coming in. You've got people who are walking into the park or biking to that trail. That's probably the worst violation. But then if you go out to Enos Ripple, on Galise Road, there's the issue of people in their trailers. Now, there's no more parking than that Enos Ripple from any other park. There's tons of parking down there. There's acres. And people could safely park off the street, but there's really very little room for a shoulder, let alone, and then you've got the people transporting buses and their boats and stuff, and it's just not safe for the people to be parking alongside the road there, so they need to park inside the park if they're accessing that program. And the same thing for Tom Pearson. Now, what I thought initially, and we've investigated this, and apparently it's not necessary, but to expand the park zone in order to give the parks authorities the authority to regulate this and give parking citations, but it's not necessary. By order, the board can designate who has the authority in these no parking zones to enforce them. The sheriff's office, when I talked about this park 5 years ago, they didn't have the resources, and certainly don't have it now. But the park staff, the host, and the rangers would, and so they'll be there, and from time to time. And I think we can get compliance that way. So it wasn't as complicated as I thought it needed to be, which is good and rare.
Good.
So just simply an order and designating no parking in this area. So Rob Brandis is prepared to move forward on the signs and everything else. Just want to thank legal counsel, parks, and public works for getting this together. It probably should have been done 2 or 3 years ago, but that whole wrinkle of expanding the park zone was an element I thought we had to do, but I guess we don't. So it's great.
Well, we certainly won't have it up for Memorial Weekend, but it'll certainly be up for July 4th.
Yeah,
so people come in with boats and trailers and park all over the road.
I mean, there's no signage on that, or is there?
There's no signage right now, no.
So is that going to be up for, I'll say, a month, so people get no parking?
There'll be permanent signs, like no parking areas.
So, I mean, before there's the implementation of somebody writing the tickets now, putting on their car.
No, the second the sign goes up, there's no I would imagine it's either a no parking zone or it's a parking zone, and or it's not enforced. The enforcement element of it will happen the day the sign is going.
So they're not going to become any more literate between.
But you're trying to change people's behavior,
right?
And that takes a process.
That's why I wanted to get it in early in the season, so people are accustomed to it being there now for the new season. You wouldn't want to do this halfway through the summer, I don't think, because people would be accustomed. But I've seen it done before where there's a safety violation. You don't wait and say, oh, well, we'll address the safety issue when it's convenient for the public, as opposed to when it's necessary to be done, I'd say. So, yeah, I think there is going to be a learning curve with anything. I think our enforcement for, you know, 5-day use tax for the parks or an annual pass, that takes time. But there isn't any other way, I don't see, but to put up the signs and enforce the rule.
I don't have a problem with that.
Well, I don't have any problem of having the laws, having a law has to be enforced. But yet, on the other hand, this situation, you're coming in with a brand new plan that people have accustomed themselves to, rightly or wrongly, for years. I mean, this is running a park, moving a park. It's been fine in the past. Okay, so now we're going to...
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see any problem with saying, I'm going to use an arbitrary date. On June 1st, the signs go up, and June is going to be, hey, everybody... No parking.
How do you publicize that?
It could be publicized in the media, the paper, the.
Well, we will send a press release out.
Yeah,
that can
be done before, you know, before you start actually putting.
Well, I don't think Rob's going to have the signs up in the next 7 days. He'll probably have them up within the next 2 weeks. But
he could have it very, very soon.
I imagine them painted
the day after. Painting, for just signs.
Oh, stickers.
Signs. Like, no parking signs.
Yeah, but are they already up? You said some of them are already up.
No. I said before the order.
No, I thought you said there were some no parking zones already up there. Out at Pierce.
No.
No, I'm sorry. Misunderstood you.
No, this is a new deal, but it's for a duration of space in the entrance to Tom Pierce and accessing Glee's program. Right now there's maybe a congestion sign that's in front of Calise Resort. There's really nothing out there right now. So I hear you, but the rules are the rules.
But we make the rules.
Yep.
Okay, so let's make the rule and have the sign up and say 2 weeks later from this date or a month later from this date, these rules are now going to be enforced with a monetary cost if you want to continue to park here.
I'm not sure where we do that anywhere.
Well, we will be talking about the meeting. It's posted on the website. We've sent out a press release.
It isn't. In a month, we'll actually enforce the 25-mile-an-hour speed limit sign or a red light, stop light. Well, you can run it for the first month, but after that, I'm not trying to.
No.
I'm trying to equate this to some other example of where we would propose a rule and yet not have immediate enforcement of a new rule. And I can't think of one. If we can have one. If you can come up with one that makes sense and is doable and we can implement whatever process that was, I'm willing to think about that. But otherwise, the normal process for putting up a street sign in any case, the day the sign is up, you know, 2-hour parking lot, we have the authority to start enforcing it.
You do.
Probably should then.
You could potentially have them issue warning citations for the first period of time if you're both comfortable doing that.
The unfortunate thing is if we don't include the park zone, if it's outside the park zone, we may not have discretion to do that. It's kind of a regulated, you're using the state's regulatory system. If we were in the park, we would have authority, like we do with our parking violations. We issue the citation, but we have the authority in the park to say, if you come in within 7 days, 2 weeks, 30 days, we can forgive that.
Yeah,
but
I don't think that's an option with this.
I don't.
Not under this. Under the RS.
No. Yeah. It's got nothing.
It's got nothing to do with us. Once we write the citation,
they can go to the court and plead there.
But who's putting up the signs?
We are. Public Works.
Okay. So if we're putting up the signs, and we do have some play in the game?
Well, we put the signs up on the highways, on the streets and roads, and we don't set that. I mean, that's...
Okay. I yield.
The state determines the speed limits. You know, certain roads can be this, and certain roads can be something else.
What I mean is, I mean, officers know that if you get pulled over, they can either issue a warning citation, sometimes they do that, or you get the full meal deal, and you got to show up to the judge. It's an option, potentially. I don't know if you're interested in that or not.
I just don't like the idea of going from famine to feast. Boom, at one step. I mean, we learn incrementally. So, I mean...
Enforcing the rule as
established. Me too. And we don't need to, you know, just to note, most of the people are parking out there to avoid paying a park pass fee.
It's not as though there isn't an alternative.
There's an alternative. Parking. Yeah, it's not like there's no parking. There is parking. They're just not going in there and parking.
If we were to make everybody walk to the fairgrounds, you know, for a fair here, that would be something we'd have to ease them into. But there's parking there. You'll just have to park closer to where you want to go. Oh, well, you know. So I think we can... I'm prepared to try and move this forward as fast as possible. And it is in order, so it does need to go to the weekly business session.
Okay. So are you ready to move it forward to next week, both of them?
Yes, please.
Okay. Commissioner Heck?
Well, I'll vote against that one. I'm just on the basis of what I'm talking about.
We'll move it forward to Wednesday on the admin.
And who will speak to it?
Hello.
Simon?
Yeah, Sarah couldn't be here today.
She Sorry. Okay, anything else from legal today? All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, Sheriff's Office, you do. Come on up.
She's waiting.
And waiting. This is the property room contract. Benadryl doesn't help me at all.
Doesn't.
Okay.
It's kind of nice, actually.
As I recall, we had you here before, and on this issue,
he basically requested a contact LISCA auctioneers, which I did. I met with them, and. Provided them the same questionnaire that I provided the online auction people after we discussed what we're looking for, which they answered the questions. Their premium is, their commissions is 20%, and they charge buyer fee of 10%, which is very common. You had questions with regard to their online
capability.
And it's a simulcast audio video. And I'm assuming I was going to jump in on the Saturday. They had the auction on the 21st, but I got sidetracked at home. But I'm assuming the bidding would be as fast as your computer is. I mean, if you have a lug in your computer, you're going to miss the bid. I'm just assuming that. But I couldn't test that for myself. They do not use barcoding. And I requested a copy of a sampling of their reports, which they did not provide. So I don't know what kind of reporting system they have, nor with what will be provided. excuse me, I love allergies. So I believe that was all of your questions. And I just want to, again, stress that with propertyroom.com, I have a pile of stuff. They pick it up, they clean it up, they fix it if it can be fixed, and they sell it. That's where the high commission comes in. Whereas LISCA, they don't clean it, they don't fix it, which is what they sell it as is. So, you know, the 50%, are you going to make more money or less money? And the sheriff's contention is we're not selling property to make a profit. Mm-hmm. We're selling it to get rid of it. Because we don't want it anymore.
Right.
It's not needed anymore. So
it's like a giant garage sale. I got this stuff. Get it out of here.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Any other questions on that?
No, I appreciate
this. This is just what she just stated, the commission.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I appreciate the looking at it. And to me, if I'm in your shoes, the big benefit would be, well, the barcode, because there you can track it down
right.
to the whatever.
The nano.
And also the idea of the cleaning and repairing.
Right.
And that's off your back.
Yes.
The way you have the stuff put together, you know what you're setting out, and they do all the work.
Right. And in the past, I've done the cleaning and repairing or not repairing, depending, you know.
Well, if we're just looking to get rid of it, we don't have to clean it. We don't have to repair it.
Yes.
You're just looking to get rid of it.
Sure.
Right.
That is not, in my opinion, a consideration. The consideration is the accounting that has to be done. It has to be done extremely thoroughly.
Right.
And I don't think that that's really in Liska's wheelhouse. That's not what they do. Mm-hmm. When they come to a real estate or an estate auction, the people who inherited this property or looking to get rid of it, all they want at the end of the day is the check
right.
from the stuff that they got rid of.
Right.
They don't have to do the accounting that we do. So I'm looking at that 20% difference between the propertyroom.com and Liska as being that administrative overhead that accounts for the accounting thing that you have to do.
Right.
So when somebody comes to me and says, how come you didn't pick Liska? Well, Liska doesn't do barcoding. They don't do the accounting that we require in our sheriff's office for tracking these things. And that's really key.
It is.
We need a transparent process here that people can say, you have this here and you don't have it anymore. Where did it go? How much did it sell for? Where did the revenue go? And there you go. That's the answer. Because I'd like to employ, Liska's people locally,
mm-hmm. yeah.
you know, as much as possible if they do the same thing. And maybe someday they do.
Maybe.
But right now, it doesn't sound like they do.
No.
So propertyroom.com is the one to go with.
Yeah. And, taking that administrative portion off of my head
yeah.
is huge.
That's true.
Great. We know. That sounds good.
Yeah.
Thank
yep.
you.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
No.
No. Okay. I'll move this forward.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. See you Wednesday.
Yeah.
Thank you. Have a good day. Thank you very
you
much.
Too.
Enjoy the cottonwood.
Yeah. Hey, I'm glad you do.
Forestry. You're going to be a regular here.
Should we
set up a desk for you?
Long time no see.
Every Thursday, every Wednesday?
Yeah. Fortunately, what I have today is the last two timber sale contracts from our timber sale back on April 15th. These two purchasers were just a little later getting their material in signed and everything. So no I gotchas or anything. Any questions about these sales?
Okay, where are these two? I don't know these. I'm not familiar with these locations.
Walker Complex is located basically out off of Winona Road. Yeah, both sides.
Yeah.
Kind
okay,
of
so
side of Walker Mountain.
Okay.
Yeah, east side of the freeway.
So Walker Mountain. You didn't know Walker?
They're selling the timber from the back part of the property.
I know what Walker Mountain is, but I hadn't heard of Walker Complex.
Bear Gulch is a little further north and on the east side of the
okay.
freeway as well.
Kind of towards out... probably between there and Sunny Valley?
Yeah, it'd be out
okay.
Sunny Valley. Placer access on that one.
Okay.
That's a pretty good chunk of change in that for the
mm-hmm.
sale.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
We'd like to try and make some money
Bear
when
Gulch
we can.
Was $155,000
and Walker was $274,000.
So, yeah.
Good deal. I mean, the key is if you're happy with it,
Yes, the Walker Complex sale actually went no bid at the timber sale mm-hmm. auction, and then Greg Lyles came in and purchased it off the shelf at the minimum bid. Obviously, our preference would have been to see it sell and bid up.
That's unfortunate, because that's a fair amount of wood, 100.2
feet. Right? Yes, but my understanding and conversations with prospective purchasers was there was one unit that had been put in that sale that was kind of ugly.
To make it go.
Mm-hmm. We were actually looking at the sale to repackage it, probably pull that unit out and resell it with the other two units that are in the complex.
Mm-hmm.
But before we got that work done, Greg Lyles came in and purchased it at the minimum bid, so he saved us from the work and re-advertising.
Okay, and timber vernacular, what is ugly?
What is ugly? Less than economical.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
I didn't know if it was a lot of snags or brush or...
Could be
Yeah,
it could be any of that.
Yeah.
It's just not economical.
You know, typically if the value's there to the purchaser, you know, they've got the cost associated with it. If the value outweighs the cost, then it's, you know, something they can purchase.
Oh, no, I've known the new technical term.
If it's not, then it's ugly.
New technical term. Okay.
I think I've seen that done in the past, but I worry about the cost benefit of moving an ugly section of a timber sale of 1.2 million board feet when the value of, say, there's only 300,000 board feet and that it's ugly. But the other stuff gets negatively impacted because you put that with it. Now, I'm not going to presuppose your predecessors because you didn't set the timber sales together. But that needs to be a cost benefit analysis because I don't want to give stuff away.
No.
To throw ugly stuff in with the mix. I think you have to look at what does it cost for us to go in and, well, you're going to reduce that other sale, so you put a lower minimum bid on that portion. Maybe we even have to pay somebody to come in there and level it, you know, get it to where we can even stand management again. But I don't know. For me, it's a serious consideration. You know?
I had not been on this sale before its advertisement because of the time frame and everything, but after it went no bid, of course, now I want to go see what's the issue.
Right.
Clearly the one unit was ugly. And my initial thoughts was, well, the other two aren't bad. Let's just repackage those together as the sale. And then let's possibly either just pull back, not do anything, or possibly repackage the one unit as a small logger sale and look at our prescription to see if we can do something to make it more appealing, less ugly.
Thank you. New forestry term.
The only other thing that I had was, there's any other questions about the FEMA grant presentation that Jenny gave the other day?
Actually, we were going to take action today. That's this one. We postponed it today.
Yeah.
No issues.
Yeah.
So we'll be moving it forward.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
In fact, since we agree we're going to move this forward, why don't we just go ahead and do that?
Okay, so the timber sales are going to go on
admin,
and finance speaks to them.
Yes.
And then the
so you
grant.
Don't have to be there. And then the
HR grant have to go on admin too.
Admin.
Yes, this also. That goes on admin.
And then who will speak to that?
Finance.
You want to?
Or
you want Jenny there?
No, I can speak to it, but technically I think it's under the emergency management office. The chair could speak to that, but I'm happy to. I understand them.
If you need me there, just let me know. Jenny's.
So, I mean, I would do it, but do you want to do it because it was going to be benefiting? I was thinking benefiting the forestry.
Sure.
So
sure.
I was thinking.
I'd be happy to.
Okay.
No problem.
All right, then. All right. You're off the hook, Dave.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Public Health, Diane Hoover. And she's brought some guests today.
Can we set up a tour sometime in the next couple of weeks to get out and look at some sale areas or something like that? If you're going to go out, let me know.
Yeah, have a lovely day. If you have some specific you want to see, let me know. We'll get all arranged and laid out there.
That'd be great. Cool.
Yeah,
thanks.
Okay. Good morning, Commissioner. Would you please state your names for the record? We have two guests with us.
My name is Cassandra Allen, nursing student from Oregon Health and Science University.
And Michelle Vasquez, same.
Vasquez.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And I've invited Michelle and Cassie here to present to you their findings. They did a homeless youth survey for Jefferson County.
So with that. Okay. So our objective for this term is going into just to kind of find out what the barriers were for the homeless youth at Vinci High School, and also see what the perceived barriers from the homeless youth herself, and then also from the community organizations in Josephine County for the homeless youth. So a little bit of background. So the 1,551 homeless people were counted in this year's PIT count, which was a 17% increase from last year.
Can you define what homeless is? Because I think a lot of people have a misconception that they're actually under a bridge somewhere.
Sure.
That's not
so it's a large definition. So it's families living together, if they're living in trailers, anything that can be moved is deemed homeless, couch surfing, sort of all those things fall under what a homeless is considered. But on the pit count, they literally will go out and count with the people that they find in the shelters and in the streets. So a lot of these people probably are missed, the ones that are living together. So that number is probably even much higher.
And this is District 7 and Three Rivers?
Yes.
All of Josephine County.
Yeah. Also, if the youth live with grandparents other than their parents, that's considered home. If they don't live with their biological parents.
And that's where some of the, I appreciate that and all of the, we raised our grandson.
Mm-hmm, right.
But he's considered homeless.
Yeah, under criteria.
Yeah, which is absolutely inane.
I understand that.
I appreciate the matter of the statistic. It actually probably averages out for those you don't count, but those you do capture, the statistic might be pretty close to accurate because of that broad definition that may not exactly be 100% accurate the way we would think of it. But
right.
Stable, maybe, or something like that could be a better definition other than stable housing.
Right.
So, but the 17% increase from
is really
last year is huge.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you're using the same standard,
exactly.
From year to year.
Mm-hmm.
The other question I have, so this is based on the pit count, you said?
Yes.
Your study, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not those that are living with their grandparents.
And this is, so 37% of those, a little over 500, were youth under 18 years old. So 637 youth are enrolled in the Josephine County School District as of this year. So kind of some comparisons I did with, so the high school, we kind of focused on high school graduation rates, which is a little lower in this county than the national average, about 87%, national average is 89. And then I did some county comparisons for Josephine to Umatilla and Benton, just basically because there's similar size populations. So what I found was that Josephine County has about approximately $12,000 less median income, with a homeless population of 1,500 compared to Benton County, which is 127 homeless and a pit count, and 52 in Umatilla. So it's a huge, drastic difference. So some of the methods that we used.
Yeah, so what we did was we interviewed the various community organizations and the community members and all the school advocates in Josephine County. That's where we started our research, and then we did the windshield survey, which means we drive around, we walk around, we see where possibly the homeless youth are hanging out and getting to know the area itself. And we went to the three different high schools and to a community safe place that serves the homeless youth. So we kind of hung out with them this term in those areas. We also used the secondary data from Community Health Assessment 2013. And the Josephine County Homeless Task Force pit count, which we discussed. We did a lot of research on various evidence-based research done regarding the homeless youth. So that's where we were gathering all our data, so evidence-based and secondary data.
What does that mean?
Evidence-based?
Yeah.
Well,
I know what evidence-based means, but what is the evidence-based information that you're
So what we looked at, we kind of focused on high school graduation rates for the homeless youth.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the evidence is telling us that is if the homeless youth are not supported, basically self-esteem is one of the number one factors of them continuing in school. So they fit in with their peers, they feel comfortable. So a lot of times they move around, they don't feel comfortable, they don't have new stuff, so they'll end up dropping out. And so studies say that if, below a high school graduation rate, your wages go way down, your employment goes way down, and so that just continues that poverty cycle. The same, so your homeless population is going to increase. Also,
okay, so in round figures, okay, so 45% of those who start ninth grade in Josephine County don't finish. I mean, the 45% of the group that start, 45% of them don't finish.
Okay.
Now, are those all, how many of those, that 45% is homeless according to this?
So two schools have reported just above a 23% dropout rate just this year alone of the county schools. Grants Pass High School has the most. They had about 70, 80 high school students that were homeless. A lot more in the younger elementary. So every school has a significant amount enrolled that are deemed the homeless kids. And a lot of them are dropping out. And I think there's a problem with the school advocates, not so much in Grants Pass High School. They have a lot of resources there. But the county schools, what we're finding is that a lot of the advocates have several roles. So they're very limited on their amount or their ability to see where these kids are going and to help, and so a lot of these kids are just falling off the map.
How much of an effect do those advocates have, being that they get to see them, you know, for 5 minutes, an hour, a month or something, and you're really
right.
trying to combat the fact that there's maybe an abusive household or there's
right.
very low income. If the effectiveness, I mean, it could be very daunting to be one of those advocates, but...
I think
that's one of the key drivers, Simon, to putting a community health worker in each one of the school districts, because their full-time job is going to be identifying those at-risk kids
sure.
and getting them hooked up with resources.
Okay.
So, and that was a grant that you guys
yes.
approved.
Right.
Yeah, so at the Grand Pass High School, we do have Cassie, I didn't know if it's in her name, but anyway, she is a full-time family advocate.
Mm-hmm.
But in the county, they don't have a full-time advocate. So they have, like, other, like, one is supposedly the family advocate at Hidden Valley. She's, like, a receptionist, and she has 1 hour a day to be a family advocate and another position. So... It's very limited for her, and, well, it's the county schools altogether. The Grand Theft High School has one full-time, and that's what she does.
So can
very
you,
different.
Can you guys identify, share with the board what the gaps you found?
Yes. So the gaps we're finding is that, so with the surveys from the homeless youth, their top needs were a safe shelter, transportation, and clothing. From the advocates, what they think that youth needs are large backpacks to kind of keep them going with the stuff they have. So there's gaps from the county to the city. The county, obviously, they're farther out. They don't have access to transportation that they do here in the city.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the hours for the advocacy to help the students to make sure the family, you know, involvement. So they're losing a lot more students out there. And our research is telling us that, you know, if they don't have one positive support or they don't have that one person to kind of help make sure they get through it, they're not going to continue high school. They're not going to go beyond that. And one statistic I pulled out is for 1 year to put a youth in juvenile detention costs about $57,000 compared to 1 year of housing one youth is $5,500. That's a significant amount difference. So...
And the other thing that they shared with me yesterday that I thought was kind of profound is the advocates thought that giving the kids the backpack was, you know, their number one need
mm-hmm.
without realizing one of the unintended consequences of that has been that then that makes them a target
right.
is some of the older right. people who want that backpack.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, and...
that safe housing.
Right, that's right.
The kid's number one concern.
Exactly.
Everything else is...
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it has to be a certain kind of height,
right.
otherwise they're homeless.
Yeah. Well, I'm not really not sure that I care about the definition of like how you prepare these kids to be successful. And one of the other things I think is that relative to Benton County, I went to a school up there, and then Umatilla, that's not a very conducive place to be homeless. It's pretty cold. And the community is a dismal. It's a different rural.
Okay.
It's a farm-based, ag-based rural, which is a tighter community.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I talk to the commissioners on the east side, one of the things that makes their communities great is all of the people who are involved in agricultural production, they seem to be really interested in their communities in just a different way. It's not better or worse, but it's just they're really engaged in their communities. And they're coming out for rodeos and fairs
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
doing all that stuff. We're a little bit disconnected. I think we've got these little communities, Williams and Wolf Creek and stuff, and
mm-hmm.
people here prefer their solitude. They want to
mm-hmm.
be out on their own, and there's that. And there's also the counterculture that, you know, was established in Grosvenor County here in the 60s of people who were a little bit less inclined to conform, and I think that's multi-generational,
mm-hmm.
Kids that are interested in some other... They're not interested in going to college because their parents didn't go to college.
Right.
And that culture lives on
mm-hmm.
for sure
exactly.
in different regions of this community.
Right.
Well, it's very simple in my mind in regards to why agricultural communities have less of the problems, having lived in one and grew up in one
mm-hmm.
the generation before it, was that even if you weren't fond of a neighbor, you know, you didn't have the
yeah.
same interest
yeah.
or... or, you know, maybe they were a really belligerent individual when it came to some of the interpersonal reactions. But you know what? You could always count on each other if you needed to get your crop in, if something was flooding, if your animals got loose, or, you know, your kid got lost or whatever. You could count on those neighbors, even if you weren't the best of friends. You always knew you had to depend on each other because you were the only ones there.
Yep.
And that isn't the climate and the culture here.
Yeah,
there are individuals who still do that and still believe in that. I mean, even in the neighborhood I live in, you know, we do. But most neighborhoods are that way.
In this flyer, there was the currently no overnight facilities to house unaccompanied homeless youth under 18. And that's a telling. There are no options. And of course, then you get into the requirements of liability cost. If you can house a minor, they get all kinds of, sometimes the standards and requirements from the state forbid you to take somebody in, kind of thing.
Right.
But also the sign gets pulled in, that's very telling. It says, you know, I have no excuse. Okay, good. You're taking ownership for the situation. I have no excuse. I just need some help. Okay. And there's kids out there, whatever the reason might be, they need to have some options to be able to live, not just exist.
I think sometimes when I was growing up, it almost can seem a little fun at first, you know?
Even if
things aren't that bad, you just find another reason to go spend time at somebody else's place. But after a while, that gets old.
Yeah,
and
it
wears on people, and then how do you get into something else that's more positive that actually has some stability?
Right.
Do you guys have you guys are students, right?
Yes.
So this is a project that you did for your class?
Populations project.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then does that include proposed solutions?
Well, we're going to go into the next term is our fall term of leadership. So that's where we implement an intervention of some sort.
Yeah.
So this term is populations. We pick a population. We do all the research.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much sitting on our hands, gathering information. So that's the next term is what we're doing, is implementing an intervention.
Some information. So from the basics starts is what we thought is support, more increased donations to the high school closets where the kids can access the things. So the ones that are in school, they have access to clothes, to hygiene supplies, to school supplies through the McKinney Center Act and through community donations. So just making the community more aware of the numbers of the youth, because I was never aware. I wasn't aware of any of these organizations. And so I think that would be a positive thing to make sure they have the stuff to give to the kids. Is a place to start. Another place is one of the Canadian organizations here that works with the youth or is going to have that vocational people coming in and acting as a mentor with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it would be a positive thing if we can get some kind of vocational training implemented with that program, teaching them basic things how to budget or things that they're not going to learn if they don't have that positive adult in their life that we had, to teach us life skills.
That mentorship program was a project that I developed with Darren. All Care Health Community Advisory Council had some health equity money that had not been tapped into. So I've been meeting with community partners of all kinds, Family Nurturing Center, Joe's Place, to think of community-based projects. And I've never been in this position of asking people to apply for grants. We have money. If you have a good idea, something that would help with healthcare equity, please apply. And then I don't vote. I disclose that I was part of the development of the project, and I don't vote on it. The rest of the CAC members do. So that's an ongoing project that is really going to help the homeless youth that are taking advantage of Joe's Place. He now has, instead of a mobile food unit, he now has a brick and mortar facility so the kids can actually come inside and spend time, getting whatever they need. So that is part of the next chapter of what these ladies are working on as far as their leadership and whatever recommendations they may be coming forward with.
About a year ago, that sounds great. I think those are really going to be effective. There's a group of people that I've
put together. We tried to put the names of everybody who is involved with some sort of youth services in one room.
You had, I was there.
And Dwayne Stark really was supposed to kind of take that on and keep it going from the standpoint that these people rarely talk to them, talk to each other. They talk to themselves a lot. They don't talk to each other. And that was a, I thought there was benefit in that, getting together once a year, having these roundtable discussions from a standpoint of, what are you doing that I wasn't even aware that you were doing? And then what are the things that are needed in the community that nobody's doing?
Mm-hmm.
And that was really telling when we all sat around the room. It was like, I want to say 40.
It was packed.
It was packed of different people, maybe one or two representing different organizations that have a youth focus. And some people were meeting people for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I thought, how are you in this field? But it happens. You're so...
But it's understandable.
Yeah.
It's understandable because it is a turf battle.
See, that's something I don't understand.
If you justify your existence on the basis of the need, and my need is greater than yours, and so I'm not, because I have to justify my existence, I'm not going to show you how this kind of stuff. And that's, I do believe though that as people learn who people are.
Yeah.
And what the works are, that there can be a greater melding together to accomplish a goal. There's no one agency or person that can meet the need entirely. It just it can't be done. So I have to learn how to work together with folks, or basically I'm saying, it sounds a little harsh, I'm saying I don't really care about the folks we're trying to reach out and work for, because I can't meet all their needs. But I'm not going to work with together to try to meet their needs, because you might take some of mine. And you say, come on. The need is much, much greater than that.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I really want to emphasize, though, is that the need is immense.
Right.
The solutions are oblique at best. They're not very clear cut.
Mm-hmm.
But to say that, to begin to work together for a common goal, which is greater than ourselves individually.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to say, come on, man, there's got to be a better way to do this than what we're doing right now. How can we do that? Together. We have to do it together. We have to have a camaraderie together. And whether it's, I'm out of a church background. So to say the need is there. So the Mormon church, I disagree with entirely on theology and all this other kind of stuff. But let's see, they've got a fairly effective youth programs. So how can we capitalize or develop or work, or how can they support us in some way to have that kind of a mindset?
Mm-hmm.
Because individually or organizationally, it's not going to be solved individually. So that's the struggle. And to be able to have some of these things out on the table and to talk with them, like Commissioner Hare is saying, If you don't talk to one another, you don't even know who in the world they are.
Mm-hmm.
All you're doing is duplicating your own, the money that is there, which is limited,
mm-hmm.
is being scattered so far and wide that nothing really effectively gets done.
Yeah. I think the cumulative effect needs to have a singular goal, and I think high school graduation rate is probably the number one.
Mm-hmm.
For me, so in the guy who owned the Gallup organization, he did a poll of 180 countries, and he said, what was the leading number one contributor to the economic success or indicator of an area?
Mm-hmm.
And it was high school graduation rate. You'd think it'd be something else like internet access or literacy rates or something like
right.
that. And that has an effect on each individual population, but the number one thing that was consistent among all 180 was high school graduation.
Right.
So if we put all of our emphasis, on that and everything contributing to what prepares and gets kids to that rate, that focal point is fairly key to everything else that we were trying to aspire to in a community. And I think that could be an umbrella for everybody working towards kind of that goal.
Mm-hmm.
as long as we don't dump down the high school education system to where we get everybody graduated,
everybody
so we're all better.
Great, it's good to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's true.
I have a question on this one where it says the quotes from the youth. It says more access to food without tweakers.
Yes.
Is that because of the food kitchens that are out there, that if they're afraid to go there because of the
yes.
drug?
And honestly, we went there one day to see if we could find any youth to talk to and seen a few people being arrested. And the sad thing is, those are the problem homeless that the community sees, and then they attribute that to the whole population. And it's just not. And it's really sad. And it's hard to get past that because it's right downtown and everybody drives past it. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
So that was what they were talking about. They would like
yeah.
to have a place where they could go, where they could
yeah,
get meals without having to be...
Subjected to
that negative.
And you get in that situation
behavior.
Where they are all, they stereotyping for the illustration,
yeah.
the youth, they're all bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so mm-hmm. they can handle all this kind of badness. No, they can't.
No,
no they can't. Mm-hmm. And that's all part of the show, that is the externalization of their bravery and their badness to mm-hmm. protect themselves as they get into these different situations. And
kind of the way I've always couched the shelter that we used to operate is it wasn't bad kids, they were kids in bad situations.
Definitely.
And, you uh-huh. know, those bad situations can lead them to do desperate things and make them into, not positive.
And the
youth.
Longer they're in
right.
that situation, the worse it gets.
Yeah.
Because they have to
yeah.
learn how to, they have to learn how to adapt to
right.
that.
And then they get themselves in trouble.
Sure.
And then that's where we get into that rate of, you know, $57,000 to keep one youth in juvenile detention
yeah.
goes in that direction.
And my claim to fame is, oh, I shouldn't say that because I didn't misunderstand, so that will be misunderstood. I mean, I didn't finish high school.
Mm-hmm.
I did finish high school when I graduated when I was 24.
Mm-hmm.
But slow student. But yet on the other hand, yeah, thorough, sorry. but you realize, okay, there are a multitude of reasons why a youth kid does not graduate from high school. There's a multitude of reasons. And as our whole societal support umbrella of whatever options that are there, all those come to play. And they come to play, they resonate with those who don't want it. This is a pain in the rear end anyway. Who cares? And there is support for that mindset. And you gravitate toward that support system. And then if you do something that is antisocial, then you get busted for that very quickly. That just reinforces how bad I am, and it just becomes a vicious circle. And it took 4 years. No, it took about 2 weeks. No, about 20 minutes of boot camp straighten that thought out. But you realize, okay, but just to throw okay, that doesn't help anything.
Any other questions for our students?
I think the research you guys did is a really great place to kind of start, but I would challenge you to dream big with your potential solution or an element of it,
mm-hmm.
And something that's going to be stable and sustainable. That's pretty key. I think the issue needs stability.
Mm-hmm.
Things that would pop up as great ideas but are tied to one person,
mm-hmm.
have a limited lifespan.
Right.
Somehow, even proposing something for organizational structure of the existing resources out there that will, you know, if you could take something that would be, take every organization and make it 5% more efficient and effective, that's much greater than just adding 5% to the capacity of the problem. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
you just multiply it. So,
yeah.
just a thought.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
We don't know. That's why we're saying for next year.
I'd love to help.
Yeah. Well, and the
key issue. So if there's anything I can do, I'd love to help.
Thank you.
Yeah, and the
thank
idea
you very
is organizational. These, my personal opinion, these folks, you cannot solve their issues by providing more food. That's not going to solve their question. There has to be some attachment with some other stable organization,
mm-hmm.
families, or whatever. It has to be some. Otherwise, they have to find some other weak spot to attack because they can't do it by themselves.
Yeah.
Are you guys familiar with Commissioner Heck's background as the Gospel Rescue Mission?
I'm not. Sorry.
He's got an extensive background in this issue, tangentially or directly.
Personally, yeah.
And, so it speaks authoritatively.
I think it's interesting that one of the other comments in here was one of the needs to be helpful was 24/7 shelter.
Yeah.
We have a shelter. It's empty. We have no money to rent it, right?
Yeah. Right. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Michelle, thanks, Kathy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very sad. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Okay. Thank you for
you have the whole time. Yeah. Allowing them the time to come.
I said it was Diane Brock.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Hey, next, in the last quarter, the Public Health Department, we conducted 143 communicable disease investigations. 98 of those were for sexually transmitted diseases. Now that I am allowed to report quarterly instead of monthly, I thought it was appropriate to just give you a budget update.
Well, hold on. I was looking at some other stuff, and you popped over that one real quick. What was it? I heard sexually transmitted. What was that figure? Or
98 of the 143 communicable disease investigations we conducted last quarter, which was January through March, were for sexually transmitted diseases.
Is that going up, down, stable? Syphilis
is going up.
It's going up, okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can, you know... Gonorrhea is one thing. Syphilis is entirely different. I mean, it's a much more serious. And, I mean, they're all serious in a sense, but, I mean, consequentially wise, syphilis is a very, very serious. Because it doesn't always show itself.
That's right.
That's the problem.
That's right. And Dr. Candelaria, about 6 months ago, did put out a memo to area physicians just to be on the lookout and consider syphilis as part of diagnosing things.
We're making progress in our society.
Somebody leave some keys for those.
Those are mine. So, in back to the budget, when I looked at total revenues and expenses for April, the department was at 99% of budgeted revenue and at 72% of anticipated expenses. The straight line percentage for this time period is 80%, so I'm over executing in revenue, underspending in expenses. I'm also anticipating more accounts receivable than budgeted due to improved billing practices and increased visits. Therefore, I anticipate closing the fiscal year in black again.
Great. That's fantastic. You did gloss over the fact that you've gone from monthly to quarterly reporting, and that was something that I think the board addressed kind of offline from the standpoint that one of the reasons this was implemented back when you were hired from a monthly standpoint of reporting because of the financial situation of public health, the parks and the fairgrounds were the same way, but because of your stable situation financially, I think it was appropriate to have you reporting quarterly, and it makes a lot of sense.
Thank you.
Thanks for all your hard work. I think we just glossed over the fact that you graduated into a financial stable area, and it's fantastic.
Well, and it certainly wasn't something that I accomplished alone. The finance department has been really great in helping us clean up accounting practices and our internal processes. So it's really been a team effort over several years. The Animal Shelter Advisory Board has been painstakingly working on providing you with a suggested update to the county animal ordinances. The current county animal ordinance has not been updated since 1996. The Advisory Board is following the guidelines of the National Animal Interest Alliance Guide to Pet-Friendly Ordinances as a starting point.
You're familiar with that, right, Commissioner?
Yes, I am.
So I brought it just to show it to you. So it's a guide, and then they have a sample model animal control law, a supplement to the guide. So your Animal Shelter Advisory Board is kind of following this process in putting something together to present to you later on in the year.
Great.
The cat building is coming along well. Interior drywall has started to go up this week. It took a while to get going because we need clearance from the DEQ on our septic system to keep costs down. Some windows were donated and some siding was donated. And finally, what you're really probably interested in is in your package is a copy of the non-binding letter of intent to lease space from All Care Help. I asked Leah to look it over. She didn't have any problem with it from a format perspective. So I'll be working with Commissioner Walker to bring this forward to the board to get it signed and submitted. This document is...
Do you have any, is there information in there on what your current... I'm interested in the idea from a facility standpoint that you've done. We've talked anecdotally, really, for the last couple of years that your space allocation right now is maybe larger than you need or an efficient use of how the building is configured. So I'm interested in the facilities idea that you need X number of square feet.
That's the document.
You've got that coming in. So the office space that you... I'm also interested in what you're using right now as your footprint. How big is it? What are you paying per month or annually? I know you're paying 61 cents per square foot, but what are those other... What is your cost comparative? If you're spending $80,000 this year, is your proposed cost allocation, is it $60,000? Is it $90,000? How are you justifying a difference in space? This is a great thing. You need to investigate this move thoroughly. And because, frankly, we're moving forward with the Denver Campus redevelopment project, so we've got to find a space for it.
Right.
But I also want it to be fiscally relevant.
Absolutely.
Right
now, we're in roughly 12,000 square feet. But when we developed this document, we walked around our spaces with the architect and talked about workflow, and that's how we came up with square footage. What's not included in here is eventually putting two dental chairs in, and now I have animal control officers working. So this document is still...
So maybe based office-wise, space-wise, et cetera?
Yes. What is not included in here is that back, you've been in our building, Simon, so you know that back storage area. We don't want to pay prime dollars for storing stuff. You know, so we've got, the public health department has two jail cells
downstairs,
6 and 7, I think, where we started putting our storage long-term documents.
Great.
Are there. So as part of a moving process, we would have to figure out another place to store. A lot of that stuff was bought with grant money. We'll have
but
to just figure that out.
Storage, is that inefficient to have it stored here?
We probably
for access.
We need to rethink about our storage.
Yeah.
I have a question. There are companies that go in and scan everything, and you get them all on little cards. Can't we go to that with those? If those are just old records for the sake
there
of keeping medical records kind of thing, can't we just do that?
That we can digitize, but there are other records that we have to keep paper copies of. I know mental health is that way. There are mental health records that we're required to keep forever and hard copies of. Maybe the legislation will change on that eventually.
Well, I was just wondering, because a lot of the doctor's offices are going to that because of the storage issue. I mean, they're anywhere their storage was bigger than their treatment areas.
Right.
And so they've gone to putting them on the little, what do you call those?
Thumb drives.
Thank you.
But they're stored in the cloud, too. You don't want storage on a thumb drive, something.
Well, you lock them up just like you do the files. You know, and you have backup.
Yeah, but they have to duplicate them.
Yeah, the cloud.
Yeah, for sure.
The security.
So it's all part of an ongoing conversation.
Yep. Well, storage is actually an issue.
It is. It is. And this document is the timeline for everything.
Okay.
I talked to Ryan yesterday, and I promised him a copy of this package, too, just so he's not
caught off guard
or surprised by anything that's going on. And
so that's going to have an effect on his budget when you are no longer a contributor to the space. We'll have another 12,000 square foot of empty space.
Yeah, and he's always very helpful. So the last two documents in your package I just provided because it's interesting. Housing as a healthcare investment, and then neighborhood level interventions to improve childhood opportunity and lift kids out of poverty. It's a peer-based article.
Diane, so the housing development that's coming on with 50 units from the Jackson County Housing Authority, how is that going to, are there people in transitional housing right now or homeless going to say, okay, so there's 50 people that are utilizing less than what they should be, so they're going to move over here. Does that open up capacity for people who are on the streets to be able to access that? And I don't know if you can answer that question.
I don't think so. And I have an email that I just got yesterday that I will forward to you that talks about the unaffordability of even basic rental units in the state of Oregon. And our community is worse affected than most. Anecdotally, I was talking to Shelley. She's the COO at Options. Mm-hmm. Her husband came home last week, and he's got two professionals. These people have good jobs. Mm-hmm. They're living in homes that the landlord is getting ready to sell. And if they can't find a place, these two people, these professionals are, one of them's already living out of their car. Mm-hmm. And these are people with good jobs. Mm-hmm. And the
there's
other one,
no place to rent.
There's no place to rent.
Yeah.
You know, so if those are people with good jobs and they can't find affordable housing, and what does that say about people
everybody
who are trying,
does.
Everyone, people who are trying to bring themselves up?
Yeah, the new units that are going in over there, in order to move in there, you have to have a job.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to pay a certain percentage.
Mm-hmm.
That means it's not the idea, oh, all these homeless people can come in and move in there. No. I mean, it's a much higher level.
Mm-hmm.
But it would also, I mean, like this, these folks you're talking about, they would qualify for something like that. They might not be able to pay, you know, $2,000 a month for a rental if they can find one, but they can have facilities like that are available because they're working, they're employable, they do good histories, all that other kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's not the only opening will be if they're living in some real dive, they can move over there. That dive might be open.
How do you quantify that?
And but even the dives are going for a pretty good chunk of change right now.
Yeah.
So.
But I'll just look at the when you can find them, you know, what's available. I mean, there's almost nothing out there, less than $600 to $800 a month, and you probably wouldn't want to live in it.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and that's minimum wage, that's your whole salary. Right there.
Mm-hmm.
You can make minimum wage.
Yep.
That's it.
Diane, I really appreciate you bringing them in. I mean, that could have been something that we've never even heard about.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And that update on the statistics of the youth and really good.
No problem. Thank you.
Good information.
Yeah.
And when I opened this stuff, like I said, what jumped out at me was the 24/7 shelter, and we've got one sitting in.
Right.
Can't even open it.
Well, it's doing doing our best.
Magic. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. I'll see you at the
parade. Okay. Finance report. I think we have Arthur here. Good morning.
Hi. Got me all choked up on anything here.
Everyone almost choked me as a visitor. Gotta be careful. My nerve endings are too raw. This kind of stuff is hard for me to talk about sometimes.
It's nice to see people doing positive things. Trying to move forward and not just, you know, gripe or complain about current situations. It's nice to see someone take a positive step. I have three things. The first one will be what I'm not doing today, and that's presenting or providing a supplemental budget. Just couldn't get that put together on time. We had a little bit... A little bit more information coming from the departments, and the real urgency is simply that Chris is less than 2 weeks away from her due date, and I want her to get these things done.
Let's get important things in order.
Yes.
Well, she has a laptop. You can send that.
Yeah, that's right. But there's going to be a little bit of an interim there.
Yeah, there is. Poor thing.
Won't be a logging on. But we are, as far as that goes, actually The whole point behind the laptop was to provide remote access so she could contribute and participate, so we're working that out. So I will get supplemental back to you next week or possibly even the week following. There's not a real urgency was to get it before Chris took off, but as far as the timing is concerned, as long as we make the budget adjustments prior to June 30, we're fine. It's just the minimum cleanup. Again, it's just the minor cleanup issues, some contractual things that the board has already approved, grants that you've already approved, changes, positions and things that you've already approved in months gone by.
Is there an element for the property sales that take place on the 16th to be codified in this budget adjustment? And if so, does it make sense to wait to do your final budget, have 99% of it done? You just include that one element, or do we do those after the fact?
Well, the budgets focus on the expenditure disbursements, so we can sell as much property as we want. We can bring in as much revenue as we want. That's not a budget adjustment per se.
Okay.
Now, if you want to spend the money that you're bringing in the current budget, then you have to make an adjustment.
Okay. Yeah.
But otherwise, we're
part of that. As we want.
Bring it in. Bring it in. Yeah. Bring in the money.
The real reason we're getting those property sales is so that there, if we don't have it done by the end of June, there's a whole tax year that they don't, that they're not accounting for.
Yeah.
The role will be set by the end of June, and those will, all the ones that sell on that auction will be included. So
that'd be great. Well, it's great to have Mike on board, and actually now things are getting done, which is good.
Yeah.
The other thing is I did want to bring up, we closed the grant accountant position. This is the position that was in public health. We've moved it over to finance to provide some financial support for that position, that person. We have 6 applications, 4 of them look potential, so we'll be setting up interviews and making arrangements, hopefully, to bring that person on board.
It's nice to see the cooperation between the public health and you, and just everything sort of sliding nicely together.
Yeah.
That everybody's happy about it, satisfied with it.
I was talking to Scott Lindberg over at the city, and he's grant accountant for the city Grants Pass, just to try to get some perspective on the scope of his responsibilities for grants for the city. And that was, he was saying that back in the day, they used to have more of a decentralized approach to things like the county has. But the city found it beneficial to, because there were, you know, loose ends, people or departments, you know, having other priorities and not paying attention to some of the requirements for grants. And so it was beneficial to bring it all into a central. And his participation is actually a little bit broader than what we have initially started with this one, where we're saying we'll do the financial part. Scott for the city actually can participate from the beginning through the end. So in the grant application, the development, the submission, the award, financial part, the closing out. So his involvement can be quite a bit more. We're taking it a step at a time. So we'll make sure we cover the financial parts. And then as time goes on and we see how extensive that requirement is, we'll open it up to other involvement. And then just as a FYI, and I think you maybe saw the article in the newspaper about the law professor who came by to talk about Josephine County and the precipitous drop in revenue and support from the timber revenues and how government is coping with that. So I had an opportunity to spend a little bit of time with her, talking with her and some of the financial impacts of that.
And I should talk to the sheriff also. I talked to him about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see, because the scope of her study involves the entire nation. I mean, she's going to Michigan, to Maine, to the southern states, looking at several cities and municipalities that have experienced a similar type situation where a major source of their revenue has gone away, whether that's industry or whether that's, in our case, timber. It's the consequences are very similar. You have services that the citizens are used to receiving and services that the citizens require, but you don't have the revenue base to provide that anymore. So it'll be interesting to see what she comes up with.
Is there an expected term date for that?
She didn't have one. She's doing her work, doing her studies. So it's interesting. But hopefully we'll be able to see some of that. And that, then, is what I have for you today. Any questions or thoughts?
No. Anybody else? All right.
Well,
thank you.
She's so happy with this.
Well, we keep her happy.
Okay. Board business. Any matters from commissioners? No? Liaison updates?
I just had two.
You have a liaison update?
No. Oh. I got Michael Cobble. Well, I guess it would be true. Michael Cobble at the RV Park on the Blue Friends work up here. They are zealously seeking funding to get that put together by, and I think it's November 1st, I think it's a cutoff date that they have to have all the funding in line, and they're working that together to get it done, and the options are not really options, but they're working hard to try to be able to satisfy the requirements that the money is there. They have to come up with $400,000. RV Cog does. They're fundraising for that and that kind of stuff. But it's positive. It's moving in a different direction. That kind of thing. The other one was, I think we all got this from the Carpenter Foundation, but I want to see it highlighted. We received Josephine County Works Operations Businesses, not businesses per se, foundations, Grand Fest Museum of Art, etc. We were granted about $118,500 to the Carpenter Foundation for different organizations here, CASA, Illinois Valley Safe House Alliance, Reaching Our Community, ROC, Salvation Army, San Francisco, DePaul, Sunday Wolf Charter School, UCAN, Women's Crisis Support Team, Boys and Girls Club, Rusk Ranch, Siskiyou Field Institute, Dome School, White Oak Farm and Education Center, William, Grand Fest Museum of Art, Eugene Dibbs Potts Foundation, Pacifica and Spiral Living Center. And so that is a pretty good chunk, $150,500. That's neat. A lot of positive stuff. And thanks was expressed by me to Holly Williams, who's a functional part of the Carpenter Foundation. So that's just, you know, one of the positive things we can be thankful that people have applied for it, but the money's also there.
Yeah. Anything else?
I'd be done.
I did get a report that they had a conclusion on the BMX agreement, lease agreement. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's a real need to get it. They've got the agreement, whether we've signed it or not. They agreed. That was a good recommendation, Commissioner Heck, that they go and work on that. I fully support what they achieved at the $300 mark. That's kind of where I was. I'm glad they got there too. And I just. We don't have a lease, final lease. I thought it was kind of a plug and shut. We should have had that to move forward to the weekly business session. They're breaking ground. The contract was let to move it. Mm-hmm. It seems like I would, you know, they feel more comfortable. I think I haven't talked to them, but about moving the dirt to a location that they know is theirs. They don't really actually start paying for it, I think, until September. With the start date, which sounds reasonable, because you're going to have the fair and the horse racing, they're not going to be able to hardly use it for that duration of time to start. So, I don't know if we can kind of move the idea ahead and hopefully maybe talk to legal about putting it on the weekly business session for next week, or we wait another week or whatever. But I think the sooner the better.
Just to solidify the contract with the. Oh, yeah.
With the lease agreement.
I thought that was something that was
it should be coming in.
I think so. I think we've got it well in hand. The lease was pretty much put together, but for
Well, your pain's the problem.
Yeah, right.
Blah, 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 blah. I don't think it would be a big lift to get it done for the weekly business session. Maybe there's something I don't know.
Well, I mean, if we can get it done, I mean, that would be great because this is, okay, fine.
Do you mind checking up on that?
Oh, yeah.
Saying we'll put it in the queue. We're ready to move it forward on the admin calendar. If it's ready, if it isn't, we'll just go for it next week or whatever. But
yeah.
I know they did agree to a contractor for the Allen Creek, and they're going to want to start throwing that.
Well, the best thing about this BMX situation was neither party was totally satisfied.
No.
Nope. Okay.
That's exactly the way. Yeah. That's where I thought it should come.
But they all agree that it needs to be done, so
yeah.
Live with that. So.
Anything else?
Nope.
Okay. I met with Alan Bolschweiler at BLM. He came in.
Great.
And he was really glad to come in. He says their HVAC system was out, so it's nice over here, he said. Anyway, I asked him about the toilet thing out at Galise. That's why he came over. And he said that they have to get the lease approval through their property department, which they should have next week. Having to do, not the lease approval, the
easement.
I said lease. I meant lease. We're talking about leases. Easement. Thank you. It's one of those, you know, step A, B, check off the boxes. So they have to do that. He said it should be done next week. He said if anything they might require us to plant some kind of bushes or trees or something, they'd help us do it if that's the situation, but they're not trying to block us. They've just got to get their steps done,
and we didn't ask on time, so it's
right.
appropriate that we should, but I don't want to do it at the end of the summer.
And the other thing is he said that they want to move up on the list. One of their priorities is the boat ramp at Whitehorse. And so he's going to make an appointment and go oversee Sarah so that they can work to get that done while we're doing work at Whitehorse. So he seems to be eager to do that, to work with her on that Whitehorse project. So
as long as we define what it means to upgrade it.
Pardon?
As long as there is a clear understanding of what it means to upgrade it.
Oh, yeah. But it's just that the river
think,
has...
But what are they?
Exactly.
Yeah, the ramp hasn't lined up right with the river since it was kind of scoured out.
So oh, yeah.
Anyway, so...
well, I think...
Go ahead.
I would prefer you to continue to kind of be... based on the challenging issues that don't relate to forestry, a liaison to the BLM. Do you mind if I give you the four issues that are of consideration that need attention, at least for the duration of your term?
Sure.
When you talk to him.
Sure.
Whatever we can do to help be an intermediary or mitigate the lease the renewal with wildlife images.
Oh, I've worked on that for 15 years.
Yeah, they're going on 10 for needing a renewal.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was last year. So.
It was about 15 years ago that they discovered they had an issue with the... they thought all that belonged to... wildlife images, and they had a survey done because they were getting financing to build a building, and they realized that there's a little strip of land that's BLM on their property that they thought was their property all along.
Everything on the other side of that creek is their Cooper.
That they thought was so theirs that they built
that's
on.
That's an issue. The White Horse boat ramp that you talked about, the Hog Creek parking area. So we missed out on...
Would you provide a summary of each one of those?
I can just give you a list if you don't mind.
Okay. And what you've done or who you've talked to. Okay. That way I won't be
I don't know what the proposed
repeating.
Hog Creek is, but the boat ramp is ours. The parking lot is not. Uh-huh. We should have jurisdiction. Same thing over Whitehorse. They should be somebody's. I don't think we should give away the boat ramp to Hog Creek, and I don't think we should give away the park at Whitehorse. But it's weird to have that dual authority over it. It's confusing to the public. It's not. Who's in charge of the road going down to the boat ramp? I'm not sure. Is it us or is it BLM? Why would they, you know, they're responsible for the parking, not the boat ramp. So, because there's a pothole right in the middle of the turn that's getting to be dangerous. It's huge. So, you know, something like that.
Can we have a mysterious
spring under there?
Fill a hole.
There's a water spring that just keeps pumping out. So.
Out of that hole?
Yeah.
Ooh, because that hole gets really...
it's really
it needs a French drain under it and resealed.
Yep.
It's just very little. I mean, the river.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, great.
Okay.
I did have another thing. I got an email. I appreciate the heads up on input from Mr. Grace on the airport. I just wonder if it's within his authority and jurisdiction to change those agreements.
I told him he needs to bring it to board.
I think that that's a proposal that has to be
right. Because the leases do not have a provision for that particular. If it were written into the lease that there would be a certain increase, or could be, it's not in there. So if it's not in the lease, it has to come to the board.
Right.
And I've told him that.
Okay, good. Okay. I thought that was the case, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
It's a lease of real property.
Yeah, it's a lease, and if the provision was in there for that kind of a step increase,
yeah,
fine, he could do it. But if it's not in the lease,
the rate policy.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah.
There should be, I think, like the CPI isn't keeping, well, what are they not keeping up with? Costs?
Well, because the upgrades at the airport, the FAA, different requirements that they're having, the different demands that the public is putting on and that owners are putting on the airport for certain upgrades. Well, to pay for those upgrades, if you want upgrades to improve the facility, then we need to increase the rate that you're helping support those upgrades. You know, whether it's aprons or drainage or new doors or whatever. So that's what he's looking at.
Okay.
Yeah. So I told him that he would have to bring it to the board. Okay?
Great.
All right. Anything else before we...
Nope.
Okay.
Right. No, I put them right here. This is really important, actually. So that boat project proposed with, I don't actually have a report from the Parks Board, but the Josephine County Foundation is kind of, they're wanting to, we don't have an agreement yet, and we're getting into the season. One of the concerns that I've always had was that I was fine with having the Steelheaders, an organization that's been around for 30, 35 years, be the main proprietor of
the life jacket thing,
putting a new work. It's a new organization, Josephine County Foundation, in charge of something with a tremendous amount of liability. They don't. I think that they're looking to try to provide the funds to build it to provide the life jackets, but they don't have the continuity and the resources to supply it, and that's not what our intent was originally. We can't add to the parks having to supply it to make sure it's upkept. So from my perspective, I think we need to step back and say, what is it that you really are trying to achieve here? Because this is what we can do, and this is what we need from you. If you can't do that, that's fine, but we just won't do it.
Yeah, we can't. We can't take that on.
No. And so they're re-looking at that, and the Parks Advisory Board is going to make a recommendation to us, but I had to leave before the end, and the conclusion was reached. But my general short take is that might not be the right project for them. The projects that I've seen them do and be really successful, if they come and they supply glasses to somebody, and they walk away, and they think, go forth and be better. It's not a all-summer-long, year-in, year-out, kind of a thing. The Steelheads
to maintain something.
Great to do that. They're not going anywhere. They're on the river all the time. It's just something they do. They're a natural fit for that. Justin County Community Foundation may not be the right fit. So.
Another great idea. Good work.
Yeah.
1,000 cuts. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Wait, but where are they? Are the Steelheaders still wanting to do it?
Oh, yeah.
And the foundation, are they working with and through the Steelheaders?
No,
they're wanting to do another one.
Yeah. Of what they would need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And what's working really well with the Steelheaders. It's just made up the foundation.
Then they need to contact the Steelheaders and say, we'll build another one if you'll take care of it.
Yeah. Maybe.
So.
Yeah.
Good suggestion.
Okay. Anything else?
That's it.
Okay. We're done.
Okay.
Okay, it's 10:24 and we are